How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. He just tweeted out a second ago that it's snowing in New York where he is, and he's fragile, so we'll see how that turns out for him.
How long has he been in New York?
Well, he was supposed to actually come back, I think, today.
So he's just there on vacation.
No, they had this like young journalist forum thingy. It's actually kind of an honor for him, but I need to listen better.
That's perfect, man. He could have won like some kind of prize or something.
The young Pulitzer, and I'm over here like, he's over there for something. But that's Adam Morris on the other end of the line there. He is of Denver Stiffs, Vice, Locked On Nuggets, and Nylon Calculus. Basically, he's way smarter than either Harrison or I am. So we're going to bring him on here and see if I can keep up a little bit. Adam, you were at the game tonight. Before
was that a game?
It was an exhibition. Competition, yeah. before we get to – we're going to talk about the game really quick. It was boring, and that actually brings up a couple points. Before we get to that, though, make sure you're following the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. Use those promo codes on SeatGeek and Mac Weldon. All right, so you were at the game. You said I saw the usual spiteful tweets that, you know, whenever the Lakers travel, it was, oh, how did you put it? I think you said that half the Pepsi Center was there for the Lakers and the other half was there for Larry Nance Jr.
Yeah, I have to set the table first and say that Larry Nance Jr. is like super popular out here because, you know, University of Wyoming's like 90 minutes north of Denver. It's a lot closer than people realize. So two times now I've seen him play here, and both times there have been hundreds of people showing up to the arena 2 hours early just to catch a glimpse of him coming out of the tunnel. So it's kind of funny because it's the Lakers, and you got all, you know, not really, I guess there's not too many big names on the Lakers, but you got guys that, you know, D'Angelo, these guys you think would be more popular.
Move the needle a little more.
Yeah, and like there's like no response, and then Larry Nance Jr. comes out, and it's like the Beatles. it's pretty hilarious. And then I got to say, when he checked into the game, the crowd just went nuts.
Yeah,
it was actually pretty cool. I got to say, it was pretty neat.
Did he make a three in this one? I think he made a three. That's been a thing for him lately. But yeah, he was also like, I could see him being really popular. We had him on the show. Harrison interviewed him briefly for the show. And we have a pretty dry sense of humor, and it's been a trend now that like anytime anything happens, the beat reporters ask whoever did it if like magic inspired them to do it, or, you know, what magic's effect on practices have been, and this and that and the other. And Larry Nance was doing he was playing knockout with a bunch of kids, and he lost. And Harrison asked him if magic's presence around the Lakers was part of the reason why he was knocked out early, if he felt pressure for it, and he played right along. So
nice.
Yeah, he's a good dude, and I could see he was there at Wyoming for a few years too, right? So
yeah,
I could see him being popular.
Nothing else to do in Wyoming. They might as well drive down and watch a butt whooping.
That was the thing that I took away from this is that at the start of the year and going into the year, the thought was that the two teams were going to be at least semi-close to each other, right? Now, I don't think anybody saw – maybe you did.
Hey, you thought that. I didn't think that.
You thought the Nuggets were going to be this much better than them?
I mean, I think these two teams are exactly where I would have predicted them. The Nuggets have gotten – they've arrived where they are a little bit differently because they've been hotter lately, and they started – you know, they put Jokic on the bench. There's all that controversy. Nurkic started over him and all that stuff. So that kind of slowed them down, but then they've kind of caught up to where, I mean, point blank, I'm the biggest Jokic fan on earth. I didn't think he was going to have this big of a breakout so quickly. You know, I thought this would be him in like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is where I thought. And then with the Lakers, look, man, you have to look at the tanking thing. This whole Lakers season, I know you guys are always close to it. Not you as in like as an analyst, but I'm just saying Laker fans, Laker Nation. You guys are close to it because you're following it every game. You got to like you got to give to me this is a team that is has been trying to lose for a long time. This isn't like they looked at the standings and were like, "Oh, we got to start tanking." They've been tanking since December, since November. All the like wins they had early and all that stuff was all great, but this is a team that's so hard to judge them because they really are playing two games. They're trying to develop and they're trying to lose. I mean, tonight
one would hope.
the funniest part of tonight, maybe not the funniest, but a funny part of tonight was, you know, Brandon Ingram picks up three fouls in 3 minutes, right? He's just too little to guard Gallo. Gallo's a big dude. I mean, he's a big wing for anybody, but especially for an undersized, skinny rookie. And they replaced him with Corey Brewer. And it was like, it was almost like Luke Walton was watching and is like, you know what's not working? An undersized guy on Gallo. So let me keep that going. Like, we can't risk this becoming a game. So it's brilliant, honestly.
This was probably Luke's worst game of the year.
No, it's his best. I'm telling this is
or best, however you want to look at it.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah, I know because I do the same thing with the Nuggets, where we do this podcast every day, right? So we're analyzing things like, okay, what's changed? Like, nothing's changed. The team has a goal. Their goal is to, for the Lakers, their goal is to keep the pick because it's so important for them to keep the pick, and unfortunately, they have to sacrifice quite a bit of morale in order to get there. So, I thought the Lakers would be bad, not because I don't think they're talented, but because it's in their best interest to be bad.
Yeah, that's all fair. I think the Lakers heading into the year, now it was a different front office. I think it's changed now.
Yeah.
But at the start of the year, those guys were interested in keeping their jobs, so I think keeping the pick wasn't as high a priority to them as logic would say it should have been. So when they were winning the games early this year, people, you know, in the front office were pretty thrilled about the fact that they were winning. And even like with fans, because, and this is where you're going to roll your eyes, and I wish there was a sound effect for the eye roll that's about to come here, but but for Laker fans, this is exponentially longer than it's ever been that the Lakers have not been in the playoffs. And you know, it's tough to say this when in our own group message we have David, who hasn't watched a playoff game since like the Reagan administration. But for Laker fans out here, you know, in the fan base, we were pretty starved for any kind of success, anything close to sustainable success. And at the beginning of the year, I didn't really think it was that sustainable because they were just playing harder than everybody. And eventually the league kind of catches up. Though I didn't think they would fall off a cliff as precipitously as they did. I thought they would gradually kind of get back to regress to the mean. And yeah, that's kind of, you know, they kind of fell off a cliff and they've remained at the bottom of this crevice. I wanted to get back to
just interject here. I can't let you get off like that because you saying, you know, Lakers fans, this has been tough. It's a little bit like that billionaire kid that's in college is like, I've never had to shop for my own groceries before. This is tough. Like, you're like, look, I always say, and I joke, I'm tongue in cheek about it, but I mean it. Lakers fans, you guys have to, I think every Lakers fan needs to become a fan of another sport that the team is terrible. Like, if you're a Laker fan, you need to become a fan of the Browns just to kind of balance it out so you get the full fan experience, because most fans, this is what it's like. This is what the Nuggets are like. The Nuggets have this once-in-a-generation player, Jokic. They're not going to make it work. Like, something's going to happen. You know, like,
yeah.
That's what being a fan is like. It's about 20, 30 years, and you're hoping for these, like, little glimmers of hope. Not 4 years and, oh, my gosh, what was me? I mean, that's just, honest, I'm being 100%. So you guys should – you got to find a team that's really bad and root for them so you get the full fan experience.
Well, the sad thing here is that most Laker fans are also Dodgers fans, and they would tell you that that's been like the bad thing, and it's been 28 years or whatever it's been since they won
It's a long time. That's a long time.
But that's to win a World Series, not to make the playoffs. You know, like the playoffs, they've been there the last 4 years. People who complain about the Dodgers, to me, that's when I kind of look sideways at them, like, guys, come on, it's really not that bad. But I wanted to go back to, because regarding my expectations this year for the Nuggets, I kind of factored in because I've never really trusted Wilson Chandler or Gallinari's health.
Right.
Both guys have stayed healthier this year than they have in a little while, right?
Yeah, I mean, Gallo still has missed a bunch of games, Wilson too, but they haven't had that big, like, 2 months.
Yeah.
Traditionally, Gallo gets hurt in, like, March. I guess we're right at the time, and then he misses the last whole month. But he has missed a lot of games. I mean, he missed 2 games last week.
Yeah.
But it's been more, 2 games here, 3 games, 5 games here kind of thing.
I guess that's that's what – because again, I'm not paying attention on a daily basis to it. So what it used to be was, or in years prior, it would be Gallo out for a month, you know, Chandler out 4 to 6 weeks, whatever it would be, for whatever it would be. And
yeah.
And they're really effing good basketball players. So, you know, keeping those guys around is big. And then you talked about it at the beginning. I did not see this coming from Jokic at all. You know, him being this good. He was far and away the best non-Zubats player on the court. but I don't think, you know, he's up there. Where would you put him in terms of, I hate this discussion, but like, he's a top 20 player, right?
I think he is. I mean, look, the people don't realize this. Since he became the starter on December 15th, we're talking about 3 months, almost exactly, actually, right? No, 4 months. We're talking about 4 months. And since then, the Nuggets are the number one offense in the NBA. And we're talking about half of that was with Emmanuel Mudiay. Then half of that's with Jameer Nelson. Then you got Gary Harris. You've had Gallo in and out of the lineup. Juancho Hernangómez has started over that stretch. The number one offense, better than the Cavs, the Rockets, the Warriors, all those teams. They've been better on offense, and it's because of this dude. When he's on the court, the Nuggets are like a plus 12. When he's off, they're like a minus 12. I mean, there's just no – all the advanced stats love him, all this stuff. He shoots these like ridiculous percentages from everywhere on the floor. I think he's a top 20 player, and, you know, who knows what his ceiling is because – of like some of the physical limitations, but I mean, he's already in the realm. Like, he's already, this Nuggets team is not, you take him off of the Nuggets and they're, I don't know, 26 wins. I mean, they're not a good team.
Yeah.
You put them on and they're going to make the 8 seed, or they have a good chance at making the 8 seed. So I think he's a top 20 player for sure.
Yeah. He, my favorite thing about him, and we talked about this last time after, you know, after the last time that the Nuggets played the Lakers, it's astonishing to me to see a player make the exact right read every freaking time. Yep. And even when it's the, you know, because sometimes guys get bored of it, you know, like Russell, for example, will, you know, he'll make the same read a few plays in a row, and then you'll just know a bad turnover is coming because he kind of got bored of the same read. He'll want to see if he can, you know, slide a pocket pass in there that isn't necessarily there or whatever it would be. Jokic is so great because he's a machine. He just kind of says, well, okay, I guess if you're going to, for the fifth time in a row, let me make this same pass, I'll make this pass for the fifth time in a row. And that goes a long way in mitigating from those limitations, because athletically, he isn't anything to write home about.
No, he's terrible. I mean, he's like one of the least athletic players in the NBA. but yeah, like, I think what you said is so important, and it could probably be one of the things we talk about with Zubac a little bit. I'm sure you want to talk about him, because I got a lot of thoughts on him as a player. And the thing you said is that Jokic makes the right read. And I think that's spot on. When I watch film of him and I'm trying to decide, it's very rare for me to be like, oh, Jokic missed this, or that was a bad decision on his part. You know, maybe he misses a shot or misses a pass or whatever, but at least it was the right read. And that goes so far. I think sometimes when I'm watching him with people that haven't watched him a lot, they'll wonder why he's not more aggressive. And I'm always like, he is the perfect amount of aggressive.
Yeah.
He's shooting this like great percentage on post-ups. And I've heard people say, yeah, but he's not a good post-up player. I think, no, not true. If all he did was force post-ups, he would be like an above average post-up player. But he knows that that this post-up is really, it starts all the other stuff that he does, right? It's like the setup to all the passing and shooting and dribble handoffs and backdoor cutting and all that stuff. It's the setup, so he doesn't overdo it. He just uses it just enough, and really his scoring in general, he does it just enough to like make the defense guard him to open up everything else. So I think as a big man especially, that's one of the most important skills. I think my personal opinion, and this is, I guess, one of my hotter takes possible for basketball, it's why I think DeMarcus Cousins struggle so much is because he's dominant. He's the best at post-ups. He's the best at, he's such a good passer, shooter. He's got all these skills, but he doesn't use them. Like I don't think he knows how to like use them properly. He'll come down and do something amazing, and the next play he'll make the wrong read and it costs the team. And it's like his entire game is sort of that kind of deal. So Jokic is kind of the anti-Boogie in that way, in that he's got all these skills, but he just uses them in the perfect way.
That's a really good comparison to make, because Boogie is he's not like a vertical kind of athlete or whatever, but he's just so big and he's so strong, and he's pretty light on his feet considering how big he is.
Super light
on
his feet.
And yeah, he can at any point do things on the basketball court that nobody else on planet Earth his size can do. And it's almost a detriment. All right, I did want to your fascination in basketball. You have nothing I think that you watch more in any given game than the big guys and skilled big guys especially.
Correct. Yes.
Zubats played probably the best it's statistically the best game he's had of his career. Though I think, you know, he's had more impactful games obviously, but the Lakers lose by 30 and he was a plus 11 somehow. So
it's hard to grade players, yeah, like in those things based on like how they're like you can't say he was impactful or not impactful because the game was so out of hand by the time he even got on the court that
yeah.
You just have to grade him on the like his skill set and the stuff that he did.
How'd you think of the skill set then?
So here's my thought on him. He's clearly got incredible touch. Like he's got a soft jumper. He's got all of his little flip shots and jump hooks and one-handed push shots. Those are like he's got such soft touch on him. And I've actually seen him play now, I think, three or four times because he's played the Nuggets three or four times. And he's played well, mm-hmm. I think, every time that he's played the Nuggets. And I think like his individual offensive skill set is really, really, really promising, especially for how young he is. Like those his post moves aren't things that you look at and you're like, wow, what a crazy post move. You know, like jab step, spin move, fake, shimmy shake, up and under. Like, you know, he's kind of got the like the more fundamental fake right, go up over the left shoulder, go up strong. I mean, mm-hmm. it's really impressive in how compact it is.
I kind of put it as like his post moves are all foundational.
Yeah,
where like he hasn't needed to go to counters quite yet because he's catching people off guard by how solid he is with the foundational post moves.
He'll almost never have to go to counters, and that's one of the things about the modern post game because people talk about the post game's dead. And I just never, ever buy that. I don't think it's true. I never did. What it is people are learning about what makes a post game efficient. And having compact moves is just better than having these like super elaborate moves really what matters is obviously the points per possession, right? Like, mm-hmm. And then what can spiral off it. And 9 times out of 10, your best move is like a compact, quick and go type move, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing with Zubac, so Zubac has that, and he's got the touch. He's going to be I think this post game is going to just get better and follow him his whole career, obviously. But the question is he going to be a guy that operates from the post that you can play through, or is he going to be a finisher? And a finisher is like Enes Kanter, right? Mm-hmm. Kanter is just like him in terms of he's got these great compact post moves. He's got some good footwork. He's got this incredible touch. He gives guys buckets that are like really good post defenders. He still gives them buckets. The problem with Kanter is he's an offensive specialist because not a lot of offense spirals off of those post moves. You give him the ball on a mismatch. You get a mismatch, you give him the ball, he scores every time. You don't get a mismatch, he's still going to score a lot of the time. And what I think with Zubac, just looking at him and just kind of looking at how he operated from the post, right, with where he is right now, obviously that's all he needs. But what he needs to build off of in order to be a real, you know, like
impact guy,
a real impact guy is learning how now to use the passing game off of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of post-ups isn't just you make your move and if they double, you kick out. A lot of the post moves are I'm actually making a move to draw the double.
Yep.
Or I'm making the move that's going to get this guy. Like I know exactly what the defense is about to do. I'm going to force their hand. And if they don't double, then I just have my easy little post move.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now I think he's this guy that just goes in there and it's just score, 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 score. And that's all he's got to focus on at this point. But his real the real test for him will be to spiral offense off of that. And then the other thing is he's got such a good jumper. I think I'd really like to see Luke incorporate a lot more DHOs and pick and pops, because it's so difficult. This is what Jokic, I think Jokic and Zubac, if they just did post one-on-one, they'd probably finish like 50-50. They both would score on each other every time.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that Jokic just doesn't post up that much. I mean, he mixes it in with all these DHOs, and I just think that's so much a better use of a skilled big to kind of make it a variety show, basically, on your offense. And I think he has it in him. Like, he's got that soft touch that I think it's going to work, but I just haven't seen it from him on any of the games that I've watched him play so far.
Yeah, I was... You didn't hear me whistle, by the way, there, right? I hit the mute button properly because my cat is screaming. but basically, I kind of put it like this, and they're obviously completely different types of players. Shaq was so physically dominating that,
yeah.
Like, it's, I don't mean it to say that Zubats is at any point in Shaq's career Shaq. I'm talking about the difference in Orlando Shaq and the three-peat Lakers Shaq was that he would catch the ball in the post, and you could just watch. I used to love him. I loved watching him do this because he had such big hands. And he was so strong that he would just flick the wrist and the ball would go across right. the court. But he would stand there with the ball up in his paw, and he would just kind of look over his shoulder. He'd pin down the first line of defense with just like one arm. And then he would wait because he knew that if he waited long enough, the defense just couldn't help themselves. They were going to commit. And he would just kind of keep an eye on the defense. He'd watch. And then somebody would, you know, if they rotated from the elbow, the guy guarding, you know, the guy one pass away, and he would know which pass, not to just throw it straight to the guy who was being guarded a second ago. He'd throw it to the next pass over,
right.
just because he knew how the defense had to rotate. And
you said he would wait and see where it come from. He knew where it was coming from.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about with Zubac, and that's where I mean, I don't know if we know. I don't know if we have a big enough sample size or you know, of him passing and doing that kind of stuff. But that will be more important than his post game, because his post game is all his post scoring, because his post scoring is already there. But yeah. Again, he's a six man off the bench. We need some buckets inside if that's all he's got. But if he can add that passing and that just understanding of how teams rotate and win and just that feel for the game, then we're talking about a dominant starting center. I mean, a starting center that's an offensive dominant force.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the other thing, too, is will Luke's offense let him, you know, make those looks out of the post? Because right now, when Luke designs a post possession for Zubats, it's with that in mind. It's we're going to clear out as much of the help as we possibly can, and you're just going to go to work.
But, you know, here's where it works, though, Anthony, because this is what the Nuggets do.
Uh-huh.
They bring him up to the top of the key. This is what Luke's going to do, too, with him. I mean, I know it. They'll bring him up to the top of the key. I mean, they'll look for early offense, like his rim runs, and so he's very good at sealing his guy kind of deep. So they'll look for that stuff. But in the half court, they'll bring him up top. You run dribble handoffs, right? You run a dribble handoff to the side. The defense fights over. You kick it to him. There's no pop, so the pick and pop didn't work. You go to the other side, you do another DHO now on the other side. It might be Fultz next year this time. So you do Russell on one side, you do Fultz on the other, right? It's just killer. And then eventually the team switches, right? Like, they just have to. If you had an unlimited amount of time, eventually somebody's going to switch the DHO just because they have to. Usually it happens on the first or second try. But now you got the switch, and now he goes down into the post. And now the entire defense is like, well, crap. We got a big out on D'Angelo. We got a little down on Zubac. Like, now the whole defense is thinking, like, where do we rotate? What do we do? And that's how they do it with Jokic. And when they get that switch and teams don't double, he just puts an easy bucket up. And if they do double, he's got a nice kick out to a guy that's either wide open or a scrambled defense that's out of control. So I think he's going to get plenty of post touches. I just think they'll come off of rim runs and early offense and transition. Yeah. And in the half court, they'll come off of DHOs. Because that's just the best way to kind of get him in the post is to make this first action and then down into the post.
Just so everybody understands here, because again, Adam is smarter than Harrison and me. DHO stands for dribble handoff. Just so that everybody knows what's kind of going on there. We don't talk about that stuff. But I appreciate it because we probably do need to hit on that stuff more often. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, and it's a comparison. It's an interesting comparison between the Nuggets and the Lakers is Clarkson obviously hasn't fallen out of the rotation because there's no way he could possibly fall out of this rotation. Moutier, though, on the other hand, Emmanuel Moutier has fallen out of the rotation. And I had an interesting conversation a few shows ago with Darius of, like, does it happen with these young guys? And we see it less often, and it's all the more glaring when we do see it, but have the Nuggets kind of squandered the opportunity that they had with Moutier, or, you know, and Moutier also did not do himself any favors, and same with Clarkson. Have the Lakers, by making him a point guard first, he had to fight over Ronnie Price, and then in his second year, he had to, his job as a guard alongside D'Angelo Russell was to feed Kobe on that stupid farewell tour. And then this year, he thought he was going to be a starter. Now he's coming off the bench. Tonight was the first time he started all year. And, you know, but I think it's interesting. It's an interesting conversation to have with Moutier and with Clarkson of those guys were both really talented prospects at one time, but it kind of just goes to show that situation matters.
There's so much I learned from this season. It's funny because this is the second full season I've covered, and the third I covered part of the Nugget season prior to that. Mm-hmm. And every year you kind of learn a lot more, not just about the game of basketball, because I considered myself a basketball expert 3 years ago, and I've like tripled my knowledge of the game, I feel like, since then. But more importantly, I've learned just all of the different ways that it's challenging to develop talent that I never thought of before. And this year, the thing I never would have expected or never even thought to think about was the Nuggets had too many guys. Mm-hmm. They didn't have an established pecking order. You mentioned Gallinari and Wilson Chandler. Those are two guys that are in their prime, and they're having to play with this second-year point guard that is just not very good. And it's like that alone, just that dynamic alone, set Moutier up for failure because he's got two in this prime – free agent vets looking for money, and they can't get the ball because their point guard's just not very good. And like that alone just put so much pressure on him because every day after the game, first of all, the media is talking to Moutier because he was the face of the franchise and all this stuff, and they're not talking to Wilson Chandler or Danilo Gallinari. And like if you're those guys and you're like, man, this rookie just shot 2 for 8, he had 4 turnovers, I had 25 points and nobody's talking to me, I need to get paid, I'm not getting the ball in my spot. I mean, like, all these dynamics are playing into it. So with Moutier, it's always cuts two ways. The same, by the way, could be said for Nurkic, who's balling out of control after getting out of Denver.
Yeah, that was the other guy I was thinking about, yeah.
Is that with both guys, they were in this situation where they had skill, but they were just put in an unfavorable spot. And it kind of, in my opinion, brings out some of the worst of them. And I don't think that's, like, necessarily a fault. I see why the Nuggets front office structured this team the way that they did. I think it was their fault that they didn't move guys at the trade deadline to kind of establish a pecking order. Because, yeah, if Moutier's not playing, Jameer Nelson is better than him. But for a year and a half, Moutier started over him because that's the future, right? And it created this weird dynamic. So, mm-hmm. So, but the flip side of that is that I don't think Moutier – it's really weird that the Nuggets went from him starting to him not playing at all, because I think the better option would have been for him to be playing like 10, 15 minutes a game so that he's still get working on it and stuff. And I don't know with him if like his confidence is going to be shot. I don't know how he's going to bounce back from this, but I do know that playing him 30 minutes a night right out the gate was a bad, bad move. And he just didn't grow. Honestly, in a year and a half, he didn't grow as a player.
That was the thing that I was – I mean, that's the logical next question, right, is this guy capable of growing the way he needs to be a useful NBA player, right? And it's the same question that people have with Clarkson of – I mean, you see it. He'll make plays every so often, especially when he's dribbling to his right, to the basket. He turns a corner on people and you say, there's just no way that that guy can't be useful for somebody. But then you kind of look over the course of their careers, and like you said with Moutier – and like I'm seeing, or like we're seeing with Clarkson out here, they haven't improved the way, if they've improved at all, they definitely haven't improved in ways that help you be a helpful NBA player. And that's the question with both those guys of, can they do that? And if not, do you try to, you know, get what kind of value you can for those guys in some kind of trade?
I think one way to put it is, one thing I've learned about basketball players in the NBA, these guys are freaking good, man. I mean, every single player on every single roster is just, they have some kind of elite skill or several elite skills. The question isn't can they do it, it's is what will they do frequently, right? Because I know Moutier can do, I know Jordan Clarkson can make the right play. I know he can score. I know he can score one on one. But what does he do given 2,000 possessions of a sample size, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. I think even more so is true with Jordan Clarkson, because I think he has more skill than Moutier does. Just like individual basketball skills, but I actually can't stand watching him play. I think he makes the wrong read, the wrong decision.
He's the anti-Jokic.
So he really is. Yeah,
he's a really talented physical specimen who, just for whatever reason, doesn't make that next level pass. You know, and yeah, that's the frustration there.
But we've seen him. But you know, you've seen him make it before. Mm-hmm. It just happens so infrequently that you have to wonder, will he ever become like a guy that makes the right read 75% of the time? Because right now he probably makes the right read less than 50% of the time.
Yeah.
And he's got the talent to still be useful. I mean, he's still a good player, put up 19 points tonight. But at some point, I do just wonder if things click. To Moutier's credit, the one thing that I think that happened or that did not happen in this offseason was I don't think Moutier felt the pressure. Because they handed him the keys right out the gate. They started him no matter how bad he played. They let him close games. And he comes back this year. He goes off for a summer. He did not spend the summer in Denver. He spent it in Dallas training with his brothers, doing a bunch of promotional stuff. And I know I'm not trying to guess whether or not he worked hard, but I just think he needed to be here in Denver. And I think he came in a little bit too confident and too comfortable in his role. They draft Jamal Murray. Now Jamal Murray is looking like a stud. Has leapfrogged him, and what I'm curious is, how is he going to handle this now? Because he's been humbled for the first time in his career. As weird as it is to say, because guys like you and me, we look at stats and we care about that stuff, and we're like, nope, Moutier is one of the worst in the NBA. But I think to a guy like that, in his mind, it's, I'm starting. I'm a starter in the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, the fall from starter to out the NBA can happen real quick.
Yeah.
And I think he just realized that a few weeks ago when he got benched. I think he was like, oh, wow. I better – and I'm curious, is he going to say, I better get my butt in gear this summer and really improve? Or is he going to say, trade me. I demand a trade because, look, you traded Nurkic and he's a stud now. So
yeah.
Do the same and it's going to happen to me. I don't think it'll happen with Moutier the way it did for Nurkic. Nurkic always had the skill.
Yeah, I think for both Moutier and for Clarkson, it's a difference between being an – you know, a useful player on a good team, or a, you know, like the Simmons, the classic Simmons, good stats, bad team player.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
they just rack up. They're great at being looters and riots, and you kind of move forward with that in your career. And guys have made careers out of doing that, but I would just hope that those guys hope that for more in their career. Anything else? Oh, I guess this was your first time seeing Ingram in a little bit. Anything
Let's
that you
talk,
noticed
yeah,
there?
I want to do Ingram, and I want to talk about D'Angelo, too, because I got
God.
But, yes, exactly. But Ingram, you know, it's funny because right out the gate, he got those three fouls. And the whole first half, I'm watching him play, and I'm like, man, it is impossible to grade this guy as a prospect until he just is strong enough to play, because he's too weak. Like, Gallo, I mean, the first play of the game, Gallo, like, cocked the ball back and dunked it on him, right? Like, he pinned it way too deep, turned around it. And it's not that I think Brandon Ingram's like a bad defender or anything like that. It's just you can't tell if he's good or bad because he's just too weak. You know, I don't have to use a cool move to post up a 6-year-old, right? And that's kind of how I feel like that's how I kind of feel like with Brandon Ingram is, it's like, man, I can't tell if he knows how to move his feet or not because he just gets pushed out the way. Now, offensively, the same kind of thing happens actually on the offensive end where you could tell he's got the footwork. And he's got like a soft touch, even though he almost airballed a jumper today. But he hit a lot of jumpers too, and he's got the footwork. But right now he's too weak.
Mm-hmm.
That 75-80% of all of his isolation moves end in like some form of step back, right? Because it's like if he gets past his guy, he can't keep him off. He can't like keep him on his hip because he's just not strong enough. So he ends up beating a guy, then taking a dribble backwards and stepping back. So, but I actually do like him. Like watching him tonight, I was actually. After the first quarter, I was like, man, this dude actually has some skill. I kind of see it. I see what the draw is He's just got to add weight. And I'm not one of these guys that doesn't like the one and done rule. I think it's cool. I'm all for it. But he's just a guy that's like,
he could have used that extra year.
But it's not even that he could have used the extra year in college, because I don't think he would have become best basketball player. Mm-hmm. He just could have used an extra year of like growing in age. You know what I mean? Like just an extra year of developing physically.
Well, he's still, according to his doctor, still going to be growing for the next. He was growing entering the draft, and it wouldn't shock me if he wound up at the end of this year being taller than he was at the beginning of the year. And then the other thing too is I was thinking of this while you were talking. Can you think of many guys who this obviously needed to, you know, there's a physical attribute that needs to happen,
right?
You know, with like Ingram.
Can he though, man? Some guys are just skinny, you know. And he can get stronger, but can he get strong enough to play in the NBA? Because that dude, what size waist is he? Like a 27, 28?
My wrist, basically.
Yeah, that dude. I mean, can that dude? I guess Kevin Durant put on strength. You know, he doesn't look ripped or anything, but he got stronger, and I guess that's what you hope for him.
Yeah, I guess I can't think of, like, Durant was the only guy, is the only guy who really stands out to me where it was, like, a legitimate issue, people thought, because you couldn't even bench once, right? Remember that?
Right, The 225 weight or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't bench that once, and it wouldn't shock me to find out if Ingram wasn't able to bench
No way he could. There is no way he benched 225.
He's benching
himself. No way.
So, yeah, I guess I can't think of many guys like that. And in those cases, in Durant's case, he was a much better player, obviously. And everybody has – anybody with two IQ points to rub together have pointed that out. But I do want to see Ingram – like, people use stats. They look back at players in their rookie years, and they use these stats to compare – you know, nobody has ever been this bad statistically and made it in the NBA. And my thing is,
throw that out.
I can't quite follow that, because there's such an obvious way that he needs to improve his game. And if he can't, and he's a smart kid too. Like you hear him talk and stuff, and he knows what he has to do. Just get stronger, not bigger necessarily, but stronger. And yeah, I think it's kind of wrong to judge him. D'Angelo
Throw Russell. That out. He's a good player. Yeah. He's got to add strength, but I see the building blocks of a very good player there. Yeah. D'Angelo, let's talk about him, man. Because
should I take a deep breath first? Should I go pour some whiskey or?
I mean, I don't know what Lakerland is thinking of this dude, because I got to say, he's another one that I'm like, I've always been a D'Angelo fan. Like, I've always been a fan of his skill set, and I still am. I think the dude, he's another guy that kind of like Clarkson, where if you just look at the raw skill set, what he can do. It's like, man, this dude's perfect for the NBA. I mean, this is an NBA player that can play the pick and roll and shoot the three and all this stuff. That dude moped up and down the court every second he was on the court tonight. I mean, I hadn't seen that kind of moping in a while. And this is one of those things that when you're at the game, you can kind of see, you know, you can see not just the ball. Like, if there's a fast break, you can see who gets back or who does what. That dude moped up and down the court like I could not believe tonight. And I was just watching him. I'm just like, man, this looks like a dude that either doesn't want to be there, which I don't believe. I mean, everybody wants to play for the Lakers. Or just a dude that, like, can't control his emotions. Because, I mean, the quit in him was so, like, just palpable. And not quit as in, like, he's – the quit as in he seemed to not care. That's what it looked like watching him play tonight, was he was just like, well, I don't care. And then he did the stupid thing where Jamal Murray, you know, he always does his little arrow celebration. It's just what he does. And then Russell comes down and hits a three. He had 10 points. The man had 10 points tonight, and they were down 30. And he goes right up to Jamal and does the celebrate. And it's like, dude, you're down 26 points. I mean, there's a level of being like a tough, like, no, you know, whatever. But sometimes you just have to know the situation. And he moped up and down the court for 28 minutes tonight, and then did that. And I was just like, man, I'm out on this dude. And I'm not out on him as his skill set, because I still think his skill set is great. I still think he's a player, but somebody's got to get a hold of that dude. This is my read on it. I don't know him. I've never interviewed him. You know, I don't know him personally. But just watching what I saw tonight, someone's got to get a hold of that dude and be like, look, you're a professional. You know, like,
well, that's just. That's kind of it's tough for me, because I don't necessarily like intangible analysis, right? Analysis of, like, you know, he could wake up tomorrow and you hear him talk after the game, and he knows the right thing to say. Now, it could just be empty words. But the way I've kind of put it this year is, this is now the second coach who has either benched him or messed around with his minutes, who is, you know, hasn't played him in the fourth quarter. Now, with Byron, it was a – Byron is the worst coach in the history of the NBA, if not professional sport in America, right? So you kind of want to give Russell a pass in that situation, but now – a lot of people are high on Luke Walton, and I'm high on Luke Walton.
I'm super high on him. He's going to be great.
And you know, here he's kind of, his actions are pointing to some of the same issues that Byron had with Russell as well. And I think it's absolutely fair to question this kid's mentality. And there are plenty of people, you know, who I've spoken to who have those same questions and but louder, even, you know, you use the word quit, that's about as loud as it gets, but there are people out there who think that, you know, who have knowledge of what's going on here, that they say, look, if all it takes is Russell and Clarkson for Paul George, the Lakers don't even blink. Like, if they don't even blink for it, you know.
Russell's a player, man. I'll tell you what, though, he's got the skill. That's what's so It's yeah. more frustrating for a guy like that, because we had this with Nurkic, right? The same thing happened with Nurkic, where, I mean, just the more you watch him, the more you're like, this guy just doesn't care. And maybe D'Angelo Russell's to that point. He's so young. Like, you always talk about it, but when you were 20 years old, you would do things differently now if you could go mm-hmm. back. And maybe 2 years from now, he'll have a different perspective and he'll grow from it. So me personally, if I'm a Laker fan, I don't want to lose him, even for Paul George. Paul George is going there a year from now anyway. Just wait, you know, just wait it out. Honestly, Paul George is going to the Lakers. You don't have to trade anybody for him. Just sit there.
Yeah.
And you guys aren't going to win a championship anyway next year anyway. So just sit there. Like, don't do what the Knicks did with Melo, right? Mm-hmm. The Knicks traded every piece that they had to get Melo, and then they had nothing to build with. Just wait. He'll be there in 2018. You guys will be fine.
Yeah.
But D'Angelo, somebody has to get through to him. And I don't know. I mean, the Lakers have so many guys in the organization, and Luke everybody seems to love him. But what I saw tonight was a dude that just needs, I mean, he needs some advice.
He needs to get his ass kicked.
Yes, kind of. Yeah. And you know what? This is the one thing that being in a locker room now, and actually seeing this stuff, I don't, you say you don't like to overstate these things, and I'm the same way, but it is the one area where I've kind of changed my mind, is that these players, by and large, man, the money does change people, and not like it makes them a terrible person. It just changes, it makes it harder for them to have a perspective. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough when a guy who's done things a certain way and is now making $7 million and starting for the Lakers, it's hard for him to be like, well, what do I need to learn from any, you know, from so-and-so? There's like four people I'm going to listen to and nobody else, because my life choices have gotten me here, which is really great. And I completely understand that. Like, this is why all billionaires are like complete, you know, jerks, right? Like, this is why billionaires like have no perspective, because everything they've ever done in life has worked perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a level of that, of what I've noticed with NBA players, is it's hard to kind of penetrate through to their bubble, because they've really closed off the outside world. But unfortunately, D'Angelo's got to start. Somebody's got to get into that bubble of his, because he's just he's got too much talent to waste on these types of things.
I completely agree. This was a lot of fun, Adam. I appreciate you staying up late to talk Lakers with me. The D'Angelo Russell stuff especially is something that everybody should be keeping an eye on. And we'll see how he responds if he is back in the starting lineup their next game. He did not start tonight. He didn't seem to take it very well. You know, you saw it the very first – his first stint. He got better with his – you know, after like the second quarter, he played a little bit better. But his first stint coming off of the bench, I think he airballed a shot right away, committed a charge right when he got into the game. It wasn't pretty, so we'll see how he responds. Again, this was Adam Morris of Locked On Lakers, of Denver Stiffs, of Vice, of Nylon Calculus. He's the smart guy, and we bring him on every so often, just to, so that, you know, sometimes I need to be woken up from talking to Harrison and his fragile statement. thank you very much, Adam.
Thanks, buddy.